Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it mean to be beautiful in America? Most of us would agree that inner beauty is a more desirable quality than physical attractiveness alone, but it is impossible to deny the pressure exerted on women in particular to look a certain way. How does that pressure affect what we do and how we feel about ourselves? Artist Rachel Hovnanian, explores these questions in her exhibition, Power and Burden of Beauty, which will be featured this coming weekend as part of the 2010 Dallas Art Fair. Rachel, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm intrigued just to start out by the title of this and the question of power, because beauty is certainly a source of power for people who possess it, but it kind of exerts power over people who want it.
Yeah. When I was growing up in Texas, I grew up in Houston, and my father moved me there in second grade. He was from Texas originally. And when he moved me there, he said, "Now pay no attention to what's going on around you. This culture of beauty and beauty pageants and things, it's not really important. That it's really more what you think and you say and do and read, and that's going to take you further than the beauty." And I said, "Okay, Father, I totally understand." With this last election we just had, when we all of a sudden had a beauty queen as a candidate, and we had another candidate for election that was considered ugly, I said, "Well, how can you say it's not important? It's part of culture, and it's spread."
Yeah, it was interesting, the kinds of comments that came up during the election that don't seem to ever, and of course this point's been made before, but we don't talk about what the guys wear when they're running for office, you know?
So funny.
Same dark suit and red or blue tie, and that's pretty much it.
Well, when they announced Sarah Palin's candidacy, you know, you could say, well, you know, she's a beauty queen, and so she's stupid. And even if you didn't believe in her political views, all of a sudden, she was a beauty queen. She was stupid. And from doing a lot of research on, you know, doing this project, I read a lot of things about, for instance, about why women get into beauty contests. Originally, it was sort of a sport for women, and it gave them an opportunity to get out of where they were, to get money for scholarships. Like, sport for men would, men had sports to get out, and women didn't. So that is one reason women are so focused on it. This summer I was, you know, in New York, and I was by a poolside, and this one, I was a host. My host said to a bunch of Russian women were there, and they said, "How is it that every Russian woman is so beautiful?" And one of the Russian women said, "The beautiful ones get out."
Hmm.
So it's just not the United States phenomenon. It's traveling all around the world. I found out yesterday, actually, I was installing the Beauty Queen's totem. I have two casts of the original one-ton Beauty Queen that I made in Italy. And when I was installing it, a woman came by and she told me that she read an article that in Thailand, that in the prisons, they have a whole beauty contest. And if you win the beauty contest, you can get out of jail early.
You know, so many alarming things about that. It's interesting, too, because beauty is something that if we happen to have it, we spend a lot of time worried about the time when we're going to lose it as we get older.
You know, I think that goes with the power and the burden, because the reason I said the whole idea behind that, because there's a burden to it and there's a power to it. So if you, in my opinion, you know, the totem that I made that I was referring to, that's 11 feet tall.
This is a sculpture, essentially,
it's a sculpture.
Of a beautiful woman.
It's actually, I took it off a trophy that girls win for being a beautiful, you know, to win a beauty contest.
Like a junior miss sort of
a junior
pageant.
Miss, actually all of them. And it's really funny because when I was starting this project about trophyism and being the most, to try to be the most beautiful, it's a fleeting sort of thing at the same time. So there's an interesting twist to the whole thing, because once you win the trophy, there's somebody behind you that's going to grab it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're always saying, am I still the most beautiful? So it's ephemeral. It's not necessarily. But it in our culture, it's the woman that I made. She's 11 feet. She weighs 1 ton. And she looms above you because it's always present over us. Though she's static and large. We're human beings, and we're constantly changing.
You actually started this when you were doing a still life of a flower. Is that right?
Actually, my previous show, which was called Preservation of the Narcissist, and that, again, was about ephemerality of the flower. And that particular painting that I was working on, I was working on a still life. And I was painting a fresh flower. And as the flower, when I came back to paint, it had died. And I said, oh, I've got to toss the flower. It's dead. And then I started thinking about it. Well, just because the flower is dead, why do I want to rid myself of this flower? It's dead. But why is it in our human instinct that doesn't want to be around dead flowers? And so then I started looking at ways of preservation and how do you preserve something. And I was at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum when I was with my daughter, and I noticed everybody getting their picture taken with Lady Diana, and I thought, oh my God, she's dead. Mm-hmm. And they're like acting like she's alive, but they wanted that was a way of her continuing to be preserved. So I did some paintings in wax, and it was a whole series of paintings I did with that. But that was the beginning of that particular series.
And this exhibition, just about every work is completely done in white. Were you also making a statement about our ideas about race and beauty?
No, I will say that I was not. Mm-hmm. I like white because it gives you a sense of it. You can put imagination, sort of like a coloring book. When you look at a coloring book and it's all white, you can put whatever color you want to put in there.
Yeah.
We talked about this at the last panel that I had in Houston. It was interesting because that was brought up. And I know a lot of the different people on the panel talked about my pieces are white. I did, paintings in white. The white narcissist, the wax piece was also in white. But that didn't have so much to do with it.
When you start with an image, and there's a whole series here also of bathing suits, and there's no bodies inside of them, they're just the suits themselves. Can you talk a little bit about what you were thinking about as you decided how you were going to employ those?
Yeah. Can I first talk about, I did a installation called the Funhouse Dressing Room. Mm-hmm. And one day I was with my daughter at a dressing room, and a woman walked out of the dressing room. And I think every woman can identify with this. She walked out of the dressing room. She was trying on a pair of jeans. And she was like, oh, oh, oh. She was just so exasperated. And then I started listening to what people were saying and then referring back to conversations that friends would have about how they felt. And then the bathing suit. People were trying on then I'd go into a bathing suit, dressing room. And there would be a sign that said, how do you look better in your bathing suit? And so if your hips are too big, your bottom's too big.
Oh, there's that little chart.
Chart. And I was like, before you even go into trying your bathing suit, you already know you don't look good. You know, what's wrong with me? And so this intimate space of a dressing room and our inner voices playing to us and really being hard on ourselves about like how we look and this perfection that we feel like the woman hanging over us, the beauty queen statue hanging over us, telling us. And so I made this funhouse dressing room you walked in, it had a funhouse mirror that actually made you look thinner. And then I put different size bathing suits in it, and it played things that I've heard people say. That is the inspiration for the paintings and the sculpture. I did a large sculpture. She's 5 feet. I call her, but it's a bathing suit, and it's called body armor. Mm-hmm. And I made the actual bathing suit. I elongated the waist to unreal proportions and gave her a large chest and a large bottom in this culture now, which we look at as being what you want. And I called her body armor because she, like in a beauty contest, if you have this unbelievable figure and you're in a bathing suit, you become powerful, and that goes back to power. And then the painting that I made, which again is white, where they're a little fluffy. She's a little heavier set, perhaps. All different sizes I made. That feeling that maybe it's not armor, that you're not feeling so good. So sensing that little bit of insecurity without putting a face in it, just like without color, you can identify. Because almost every woman I speak to can identify with this issue that we are hard on ourselves.
So you're either sort of omnipotent or you're exposed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. talk about the response that you have. I know that, you've done a lot of panel discussions. I would guess that most women in particular can relate to what you have to say. Do you ever have women who stand up and they're sort of defensive and say, I want to be beautiful, I have no problems with this, and it's helped me in my life?
You know, it's funny. When I have my panels, I make sure I have a really cross, different opinions. You know, for instance, I had Carolyn Hodges, who's a senior exec at Mary Kay. Now, Mary Kay, I know I know a bit about her, and Carolyn is this terrific woman who empowers women by selling makeup, making a woman feel good. So I'm not really saying, I'm saying who's to judge that it's wrong or right. I think Mary Kay did a wonderful thing. It's microeconomics of giving women a chance to be able to support themselves, make money, and make other women feel great. So I look at both sides of the coin. I think who's to judge that that's wrong?
The beauty pageant stuff really interested me in that it struck me that, and you alluded to this earlier when you spoke about Sarah Palin, beauty contestants may very well be very intelligent, but nobody pays attention to that once they have a crown on their head and we see them, you know, strolling around in an evening gown. It's almost as if we decide that doesn't matter anymore because beauty sort of overshadows everything else.
You know, that's a very good question. And the thing with Sarah Palin, any beauty contestant, it does overshadow it. And that's probably why I'm also doing this, because you have somebody like a Diane Sawyer. Mm-hmm. We don't really think about her being a beauty contestant. I mean, she competes in a man's world. But she got her scholarship money to go to Wellesley to be able to go further. So we don't think of her in that gown. She was able to get beyond that, but they gave her that money to go further.
So you have a teenage daughter.
Yes.
How much do you worry that despite the messages that you try to give to her, that this becomes something that is really a source of stress for her?
My daughter's been wonderful to talk about this, and I feel like she's given me a lot of information that I wouldn't know about. For instance, Facebook. I'll tell you one of the things that when I did a pair of gloves. They're called Simone's Gloves. And I got the idea from my daughter was looking at a catalog, a bathing suit catalog. And she said, well, I wanted this bathing suit, but Mom, you know, I had never looked like that in this bathing suit. And I looked at it and I said, well, you could never look like that in bathing suit because her chest is 10 miles from her hips and she's been photoshopped. And she said, what do you mean photoshopped? Well, this was when she was only, you know, 12 and a half. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what they do in advertising and media today is that they Photoshop people to make them look better. And she said, really? And so that gave me the idea that right now we're under so much, our media, our print media, internet, everything. Women are always, and men, are seeing these images that are not real. It's a fantasy. And so I made a pair of gloves that are impossibly long. They're beauty queen gloves. And at first glance, you look at them like you look at a magazine that we see today. And you say, oh, it's just a pair of beauty queen gloves. But really, they're impossibly long to wear.
Nobody could look like that.
No one can look like that.
Rachel Hovnanian is my guest. Her work is going to be featured this weekend at the Dallas Art Fair, February 5th through 7th. The exhibition is called Power and Burden of Beauty. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is artist Rachel Hovnanian. Her work will be featured this weekend at the Dallas Art Fair. It takes place February 5th through 7th in an exhibition called Power and Burden of Beauty. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here that says, wow, huge beauty queen trophy at the mansion. I just saw it. I'm staying at the hotel. It's so beautiful and it makes you think.
Great to hear.
And so you have that work at the mansion, and then everything else will be at the art fair?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And it's been fantastic. They allowed me to have that. I mean, that they asked me to have that piece there. So they're very happy, and I'm glad it's getting reactions. So thank you for letting me know.
I want to ask you about this because I think a lot of people assume that when anybody does an examination of what beauty means or how it affects us culturally or socially, unfairly perhaps, the assumption is that person maybe is not particularly attractive. And I think people would look at you and be surprised. You're an attractive person. Are people ever sort of shocked that this is something that you too would challenge and want to turn around on its head? Does that make sense to you?
Well, that's very flattering for you to say that, but I think who's to judge who's the most attractive? Do you know, it's like in different classes, in different places. Bonnie Wheeler, who was a professor at Medieval Studies at SMU last night, told us that social classes defined beauty. The queen was the most beautiful at the mm-hmm. time. That was the judgment. If she was the queen, then she was considered beautiful. So
you just wanted to look like the queen at certain points. And it's not just American culture that does this, right? Essentially every culture has some standard. It may be very different from ours, but there is some ideal.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was speaking to a woman who runs Miss Belgium, and she was explaining to me that when they were doing their trophy, that they had to be careful of how Miss Belgium was created as mm-hmm. the trophy, and she couldn't have too large a breast, but Miss Italy would have the big breast. So I mean, there is. I thought that was fascinating when she was telling me about that.
Why is this such an issue for women to a far greater extent than it is for men?
Well, you know, that's interesting because I'm now having these panels go around, I'm now hearing a lot of different men talk about. That they say they're under the same amount of stress. I think it has to do with our media, which we were just talking about earlier. You know, Twitter, Facebook, the internet constantly. Men are on, you know, also are compared to others. Mm-hmm. But I agree. In my opinion, I think that women are under much more. I don't know whether it's because through the ages that's why it's happened, but. I have had men say that they're under the same amount, especially with my last show in New York. I had a few men say, well, you think it's bad for you to go into a bathing suit? I mean, we wear a smaller bathing suit than women do when they don't have a top to cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
talk for a minute. I want to go back to this question of young people and the social networking media, because all of them are equipped with their own, you know, cell phone cameras, and they're instantly uploading these images so that there's not much private space left in the world where people can walk around and assume that they will not be photographed and have that thing made accessible, if not to the whole world, certainly everyone in one's social circle.
One of my panelists last night actually told me an interesting story. Her name's Tracy Lee, and she's a family therapist here in Dallas. And she said that nowadays, preteens and teens have 10 people that they text, take a picture of what their outfit they're going to wear the next day, and get the okay that it's okay to wear that, because they're so horrified that somebody's going to take a picture of them and if they look bad, and then send it through the internet, and then they're embarrassed. So it's an embarrassment for them. So, and then one of my other panelists is a senior at the University of Texas. And she got a Twitter last night, and she read it, and it said six. Her received tweet was back in size 2 jeans, celebrating with eating a frozen Thin Mint. So
that's
constantly,
so
and even if you try to say, I mean, from talking to people, and you know, even if you say I'm not going to let that get to me, it's still there. It's just like the beauty queen totem that's at the mansion and at the Dallas Art Fair. She's looming over you, that it's constantly being bombarded. Also media, the celebrities that they're seeing on there. I mean, there have been a lot of talk about, you know, people and the plastic surgery, but even more than that, it's the photoshopping of these stars that they sometimes, I read an article, actually my daughter sent it to me because now that she's really into my project, she'll say, Mom, look at this. And one of the celebrity stars, a young woman who's only like 20 years old, says that she doesn't like to get up in the morning and look at herself in the mirror because she looks better in the photographs.
Yeah, after they've been lit perfectly and every and blemish is removed. And,
exactly. Yeah. In fact, my last show, which the work's going to be here at the Dallas Art Fair, which I'm excited, in New York, a group of art people came through, and I happened to be giving a little talk about it, and I was talking about the Photoshop issue about the catalog, and this woman said, oh, was it blah, blah, blah? And I said, actually, it was. And she said, oh, that's what I do for a job. And
no kidding. Yeah.
And she said, I have a bit of guilt, but I know that it's really fantasy. And I know that when we take off this 20-year-old model's baggy eyes that, and, you know, removing a bulge mark or, you know, that I feel a little guilty about it, 'cause she's a woman too. And she said, but I know that I think to myself, it's just a fantasy.
Why, when so many of us, at least with some exposure to how the media work, why don't we know this and just move on as opposed to comparing ourselves still, even knowing that those photographs have probably been retouched?
That's a good question. I don't know. That's why I'm doing this. This is why, you know, an artist's job is to have people think. An artist's job is to make people talk. And I felt like this was an important project to talk about and allow women to stop being so hard on themselves, you know, to understand that this is what we're against. And by just knowing it and trying to change, I know the Italian media, for instance, they're now any photograph that's taken that's been changed, they have to make photoshopped.
Huh.
So things are changing, and I think the more we talk about it and understand, let let the opposite sex or the same sex, whoever we're under, feeling under pressure. One of my pieces in the, I don't know if you saw in the catalog, is this thing called a wall of confidence.
I was going to bring that up. And
oh, you
these are the
okay.
jars that are, yeah, yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, that goes for a burden, and it's also power. It's called the wall of confidence. And how I came across that idea is when you go into department stores, they come up to you. I don't know if you've had this experience, but I certainly have had it. They say, oh, have you tried this cream? Mm-hmm. And I always just sort of want to avoid them, pushing this cream on me. But one day I was walking through and they said, have you tried this cream? And I looked at it and I said, wow, you know, I have tried that cream. And you know, it doesn't work because you're asking me if I've tried it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, here's a burden. And I started researching all of the things that were fed. And, you know, it's constantly. And so that might go back to the last question you asked me. Why is it that, you know, we're constantly under, we understand this, but it keeps on coming. You know, it is marketing. It's billions of dollar business. It does make people feel better about themselves. But what I did is I dissected what they were feeding us. So mm-hmm. fix your face for good, have new confidence to meet new people.
And these are real, by the way,
oh, yeah.
real things
real,
that you found on actual containers
yes,
of product.
Make your boyfriend's jaw drop, you know, so, and I made a wall of confidence, I called it. So I made my own cream. It's called Texas Beauty Queen Cream. And then put these lines on it. And it's really amazing because then people start to think about, oh yeah, that's right. And that sounds so far-fetched, but we all get sucked into it. I was at a department store. I said, tell me what the most expensive cream you have here. And it opened up like a nuclear sub, and there were four vials inside. It was 4 ounces. I said, so, and I was getting so sucked in. I said, well, and how much does it cost? And she said, oh, it's $1,800. I said, oh my God, $1,800.
How much Botox is that?
I know. I was just amazed. And then there was a woman standing next to me, and she said, I use that cream. And of course, you know, my head swung up to check her out. Like, does that $1,800 really work? So, it's funny. We're all bombarded by it. And sometimes we don't even see it.
Yeah, I forget which manufacturer it is. It has something. It's actually called, I think, Hope in a Jar. And I suppose, you know, in some ways, it depends how you look at it. In some ways, it's harmless. And if it does make you feel better about yourself, then, you know, maybe it's not $1,800 well spent, but, you know, $20 or $30. But then there's always the, you know, you look in the mirror and you don't look any different. And then you have to go out the next day and find something else.
I had a woman recently, because it is good having these panels. And she said, you know, I was feeling guilty during the recession. We're in really horrible times and hard times. And she said, so I had to make adjustment. And I went, she said, what, you don't need to buy this cream. Buy the pharmacy cream. And it's only $5. So she started buying the pharmacy cream. And she said, I was using it for a while. She said, but you know what? I just had to go back and buy the more expensive cream that was, you know, $40 a jar. She said, I just feel better.
How different is the response that you get from people when, you know, there? You mentioned you had college students and you've had college professors. I'm sure the age range is pretty wide.
Yes.
Do we get smarter about this as we get older?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I would say, in my opinion, I would say yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, one time I heard a saying that said something about, like, you hit a certain age and you lose your baggage. But my sister-in-law was the other day just sitting next to somebody, and this woman was talking about getting her stomach stapled. And she was 75.
Wow.
And she said, I had to put weights in my boots because I needed to be able to get it. I wasn't qualified. And she said, if I put the weights in my boots, I qualified. I got my stomach stapled, and now I'm going to meet a boyfriend. So I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. That just happened just yesterday.
Wow. I would think it's 75.
I know. So I mean, I think it's, again, you know, the beauty queen totem. It's this over us, like a god that, you know, we're constantly, even if we try to avoid it, it's there.
Well, there's this other interesting conundrum. You know, sometimes you'll hear social scientists explaining our desire for beauty because in our sort of evolutionary brains, we think about health and we think about sexuality and fertility. But these days, it seems very often that we sweep health aside in service to looking good. You know, if you're getting your stomach stapled when you don't medically qualify, that's a scary thing.
I know. And I know there've been some talk recently about some of these actresses that are only in their 20s and go under like 10 different cosmetic surgeries in one day and, you know, do all these things. I know there's a bit of an addiction to it. And actually somebody brought up something interesting. I do a lot of things with repetition. I have a trophy case. Mm-hmm. And at first glance, you look at the trophy case and it's all these beauty queen trophies looking at themselves, comparing themselves to others. Hmm. And yet you look at them and you think, oh, they're all just beauty queens. But really, they're all different shapes and sizes. I made little sculptures and some have big hips, some have big bosoms, some have all different shapes and sizes. But it makes you think, you look at it and you say, people are all different, but we all look at them as the same.
What do you think about a lot of times when people are criticized, particularly for being significantly overweight, people will say they're concerned about health for the other person who is overweight. And clearly there are some consequences here. But there are other people who are arguing that this has become a new code, that you can insult someone for not being attractive by saying, I'm just really thinking about your health.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, when I did the dressing room, a lot of people like that because Bonnie Wheeler said, instead of having I have different sizes of bathing suits in there. And she said, they shouldn't be the sizes, they should be, they fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's built differently. And, you know, I think different cultures are built differently. So I think it's hard to judge. Who's to judge who's fat? I mean, one person's fat is another person's skinny. As far as the health is concerned, I haven't heard that. So it's new information for me, and I'll have to think about that and talk to other people about that. That's good to know.
Do you find it's different? You live in New York now, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. How really different is it? I mean, obviously, different things will be in style. Is it really, are we really more obsessed in Texas with our women being attractive? No?
Well, I say no. I mean, I think you know, it's a cultural thing here that you try to look the best you can possibly look, and it's important to look good, and it's a cultural celebration. I mean, not everybody's like that in Dallas, and there are people like that in New York, and there are people that are not like that in New York. So who's to judge? You know, it's like, is that wrong to be that way? That's what I'm saying. I'm putting up the question. Who's to judge? I did a video that goes along with my sculpture where the first place I went to was the Texas State Fair. Mm-hmm. Because, again, my father said it's not important. And I said, how can you say it's not important? And people, the animals are being judged. They're being beautified. It's part of our culture.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's a good point.
And then I went to the Texas Rodeo. I went to Liberty County Rodeo. I went to high school football game where the homecoming queen. And then went to American Girl Doll.
It's okay.
You know, fascination with you beautifying a doll. You know, we want to take care of the doll. We want to make it more beautiful. We want to make it's our culture. And when we were younger, we read stories about being a beautiful princess. So I did a wallpaper with a bassinet, and on there were trophies all across, yeah. and it said, "Once upon a time, far, far away, there was a beautiful princess." So we are raised on this.
I really love that piece, in particular because it struck me as a parent. You want to raise your kids with the values that inner beauty matters the most. On the other hand, I think we all look at our children and assume that they are deserving of whatever special privileges and powers come along with being physically beautiful. And it's a kind of a hard thing to reconcile.
It is. I know you told me you have two daughters.
And two sons.
And two sons. Okay. Well, it is hard, you know, somebody told me once that the minute you put a bow on a child's head, a pink bow, it starts. Mm-hmm. And how often do people come and they see a new baby? It's like, she's so pretty. Mm-hmm. She's so pretty. I spoke to a famous dermatologist who's very famous and in New York. And she told me that when she was growing up, she was considered the smart one. And her cousins were all beautiful. And it's funny that that's what she does for a business. She makes people beautiful.
With her intelligence.
Yes.
My guest is Rachel Hovnanian. She's an artist whose work will be featured at the Dallas Art Fair this weekend. The exhibition is called Power and Burden of Beauty. We'll resume our conversation in a moment. And if you'd like to be part of it, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. Or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is artist Rachel Hovnanian. Her work will be featured this weekend at the Dallas Art Fair. The exhibition is entitled Power and Burden of Beauty. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. An email here from Roland says, as a man who was sensibly raised by an activist career mother, I've sadly lived to see no few 21st century working women use their post-feminist sex appeal as a snare 1 minute while crying foul when an intended target responds or, for that matter, resists. What do you think about that?
You know, I read the author, Naomi Wolf, who mm-hmm. talks about this. You know, it is a problem. It is a problem. And another reason for this project is sort of saying, where are we now? You know, what happened after the feminist? I mean, Gloria Steinem got a facelift. And so you're like, what happened?
Where's the balance for you between the issue of beauty when it comes to women and sexuality? Are they easy to tease apart from one another?
You know, something I haven't really gone into. But it's something important, and it's something that I think in the future that I'll be looking at because I have a million ideas, and it's a matter of the time, and you know, this project has been really wonderful and had a lot of people talking to me about it and thinking how important it is, like you today. It's something I want to look into, the sexuality as aspect of it.
It's got to be exciting to do this work and then go and talk about it with people and get the different responses. Are you ever just stunned by something someone says?
Oh, for instance, on my video, there's a pageantry of a festival where the women are all dressed up as queens and princesses and duchesses, and they have these elaborate gowns. And some people look at it and say, oh, my God, that is, I mean, is this Disneyland? And when it went to Spain and it went to London, people were sort of like, what is that? They couldn't, mm-hmm. they couldn't. And then other people see it and say, oh, you know, I was Miss Breadfruit or I was Miss whatever. And they said, it's so pretty. The gowns are so pretty. So it's really interesting and to have the different reactions.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Steve in Fort Worth. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment about the other side of this. And while there can't be any question that we're obsessed with beauty and work hard toward it, there's the other side. I think of Susan Boyle's. Susan Boyle, she is that contestant.
Good point.
That sings so well, yet she's not very attractive, but everybody, without question, wants her to succeed. And I cannot remember the name of the horse, but in the Depression era, there was a horse. It was kind of a scruffy horse.
Seabiscuit.
I couldn't remember it to save my life. But it was a scruffy horse that didn't look very good next to his big challenger. And we wanted them to win. So,
you know, that's a great point, and I was fascinated with that whole phenomenon because I don't know if you remember in the beginning how people were sort of scoffing her and how could she be good when she looks that way. So you're right. You're right on. They were not giving her a chance, and then all of a sudden this beautiful thing came from this what some people would choose to say unattractive, I mean, in the judgment of who's to judge. But I think that's what you're saying. Am I not correct?
Yeah, what was really stunning about that whole thing was that, yeah, she was just discounted. She was almost a joke because she didn't look a certain way. The point has been made that although she's a very good singer, she's not necessarily the most gifted singer we've ever had. But maybe we wouldn't have noticed that if she had walked on the stage and been gorgeous. But there was something about that difference between the way she sounded and the way she looked.
So wouldn't you say that would be the power and the burden of beauty?
Yeah, and I guess her beauty is not physical. It comes
Correct.
From her voice. Yeah,
and then it became her burden at first that nobody paid attention to her. I mean, she was in later life that she was discovered.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, now they've sort of fixed her up and she looks a little bit different than she did. But I think she's still got that really unusual personality. And she's, you know, she doesn't seem to be following all the rules the way ordinarily a star is expected to do, which is not a bad thing, I guess. We have a question here from Amanda in Fort Worth. You mentioned earlier that you had read The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf. Want to ask your opinion on what role the fashion industry plays in perceptions of beauty, i.e. wearing the right clothes, carrying the right purse, because it's not just how our bodies look, it's what we put on them.
Yes, in my last panel, I had a woman that is a fashion, her name's Amanda Ross, and she brought the point of that she believes that fashion should be a fantasy and that there's nothing wrong with that. That was her opinion on it. I also had somebody in the panel bring up the point of repetition. We want to repeat what we see. So, for instance, like I will go to plastic surgery. For instance, if you see a woman and blah, blah, blah has breast implants, it becomes fashionable to have breast implants. Where when Twiggy was around, that wasn't fashionable. It's fashionable to be flat-chested. So it's fashion. Fashion does have a lot to do with what we consider beautiful.
And again, I guess there's that belief that if you can just spend enough money, you will be or have, you know, what you're supposed to have.
Yes, that's also a good point. And also one of the other things about fashion that's somebody pointed out to me that they love reading certain fashion magazines and they get so addicted to it. But when they close them, they want to throw up because they said, I'm never going to look like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can't afford that. Or, you know, it's fascinating.
There was a really interesting piece this week in Slate. It's like a slideshow, and they talk about what Hollywood does to make these stunningly gorgeous actresses look working class. I don't know if you saw it, but basically they talk about, you know, Jennifer Aniston in The Good Girl and, you know, some things that Halle Berry has done and different actresses. And what was so interesting, Michelle Pfeiffer, about that was that beautiful and working class were assumed not to go together. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the links we tend to make between beauty and status or wealth.
Well, as I went before about Bonnie Wheeler saying that what we equated to being beautiful was the queen. I think that is probably what is our queen in the United States now. Our queen, our princesses are Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So we all are driven by wanting to be somebody in Hollywood. And particularly if they're well known, then they're making lots of money. So then they have a higher status and wealth. And so that it does hold true.
There's also that weird kind of resentment. You know, we build all these stars up and then, you know, the tabloids can't wait to tear them back down again. And there's this idea of envy of people who are beautiful. We'll all say you shouldn't judge someone for being unattractive, but people don't seem to have too many qualms about taking pot shots at someone who is.
I guess that would go back to the idea of the burden, you know, the burden of somebody being really beautiful. Somebody was telling me earlier about the fact that there was a TV show recently where the most beautiful girl was called up by the considered the ugly, you know, boy, and his father said, call her because she's probably lonely. She probably doesn't have anybody calling because they all think she's so beautiful. And so he calls her up, and sure enough, she didn't have any plans. So it's in our culture. So it's a good point.
Do you see the standards as likely to change? Are we any more likely, the more, you know, we're thinking a lot about this now, but do you think we'll just be as obsessed with beauty in 25 years as we are today?
You know, that's a good question. And I guess that's what time will tell. You know, I just, my point is to continue to discuss it and then hopefully we'll be more and more aware of it. And as I said before, be a little bit easier on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, we had Jaume Plensa on last week, and we talked about the fact that he does a lot of human forms and mm-hmm. that they are sort of captured at one moment in time and they don't continue to change. They don't break down. They don't. They're no different. And that's a particularly striking point, I think, with your work when you're doing, you know, women's bodies and these trophy images. You are carving something or creating something that stays fixed in time.
Correct.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship, you know, that we all have to our bodies as they age?
I would say that I would go into the dressing room because, it is you are in a space where you are now the piece of artwork.
Yeah, it's participatory, essentially.
Participatory. Mm-hmm. And conceptual in the sense that, you know, people were scared to walk into it. They avoid it. And, you know, our bodies do change. We are human beings. We are organic. We are constantly changing. And in my work, it's static. It will always stay the same. The beauty queen, static. She's stone cold. She's hard. She never changes. She's there. And it's always that thing that we strive for, that we reach for, that you can never actually get. Because even the most beautiful woman doesn't always feel beautiful.
Mm-hmm. When you told me earlier, I think off mic, that your daughter's class went down to see the exhibition, and it must have been really fascinating to have, you know, multiple young teenagers responding to all this material.
Yeah, it really makes everything worthwhile, I think, when you have young people respond to it and really enjoy your work and get something out of it, to understand, to see what the pressure they're under, to say, oh, somebody else sees it. It's just not me. Because quite often, with work is you think, oh, I'm the only one that feels that way. But everyone has some feeling of that. We're all affected by it. So having able to talk to them and see their perspective on the work, what they see, the beauty queen gloves that are extended. Oh, I think about that too, about photoshopping, you know, and I didn't realize that those were photoshopped. I'm going to be more aware of that. So I feel like it makes me feel empowered that I'm doing something to help others.
So what's the process like for you in moving from one series of works into something else? How do you know that you have explored something to the fullest and you're ready to move on to a different sort of area?
Well, with The Power and Burden Beauty, I still have many more ideas. And after our conversation today, Chris, I want to thank you for that. Having more conversation gives me other ideas. I'm constantly thinking of ideas. And one project will lead to the other one. Mm-hmm. Preservation of the Narcissus, my last piece that I did in that series was a mirror. And I got this idea from my brother teasing me growing up here. And, you know, on a hot summer day and you get this sun reflecting on a plate glass window, natural human nature is to look at yourself in a mirror. I mean, I watch people all the time with mirrors. It's a narcissistic behavior we all have, some more than others. But he would catch me looking at myself and he'd say, I got you looking at yourself. You're looking at yourself. And I would be so embarrassed because it was a narcissistic behavior I didn't want to be caught in. So I did a very large standing mirror. And you walk up to the mirror to look at yourself. And then it senses you're in front of it and it turns on. And in turning it on and turns on, and there were 83 bottles of Botox I actually preserved the narcissist flower, which was my emblem for the whole thing about narcissism. Mm. And, you know, it's playing a game. It's being humor. I think humor is what gets us through life. Humor is what it's about. And I try to use a lot of humor in my work. In this particular body of work, there's a lot of humor in it.
I think your work definitely, as you've mentioned, gives us the sense that we should give ourselves a break and not expect ourselves to be perfect. But I also sense that we need to give ourselves a break for the human tendency to want to be beautiful.
Yes, it's very hard. We all battle that. I mean, why do we look in the mirror? We want to see how we change. How do we look? We were talking earlier about Photoshop. You know, sometimes we can look at old pictures and, you know, it is a constant battle.
Do you feel like you move through the world differently since you've begun this work specifically?
Most definitely.
How?
I think my conversations are interesting. On the way back from Italy, I sat next to a professor who was an ancient Greek history. And there was a newspaper in front of us, Herald Tribune, and I was telling him, he was asking me about my project. I just finished sculpting the beauty queen totem.
You did that in Italy?
In Italy, mm-hmm. Yes. I work in Carrara, Italy. And he was fascinated by my conversation. And then he said, but, you know, he said, I don't think it's really true about women. I think we don't value beauty. We value everything. You know, he was talking about the fact that media, that our society is not just on that. And so right in front of me was this newspaper, and it had a picture of Sarkozy's wife, mm-hmm. Carla Bruni, who's beautiful.
She's beautiful.
Right, beautiful. And she was, like, constantly in the newspaper. And I said, wait a minute, look at this woman, Carla Bruni. She's beautiful, but she's always on the front cover of every – why are not other people on it? She goes, well, she's very intelligent, and she's very talented. And I said, well, I'm sure that's true, but why is she much more? And then finally he agreed, okay, you're right. She is quite beautiful.
Rachel Hovnanian, her work will be seen in the exhibition Power and Beauty and Burden of Beauty that takes place this weekend at the Dallas Art Fair in the Downtown Arts District. Rachel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.